Good afternoon and welcome to the Jason Rand Show on AM 770 KTTH, streaming live on all those smart speakers like Amazon Echo and Google Home. Democrats and the state Supreme Court just pushed a major employer out of Washington State, and that is what's trending.
What's trending? The economy.
Ken Fisher of Fisher Investments is moving out of Camas, Washington, and heading towards a city in Texas. And you can thank the decision on the capital gains tax, which the state Supreme Court, citing equity, not the law, but citing equity, decided to redefine as an excise tax. 49 states, the IRS, they consider a capital gains tax an income tax, but not in Washington, where Democrats redefine words all the time. The party redefines words all the time. They redefined equity. They redefined racist. They redefined white supremacy. They redefined now capital gains tax. Ken Fisher said, I'm done. I'm out. You probably heard some of his ads on this station. The company put out a statement that said, in honor of the Washington State Supreme Court's wisdom and knowledge of the law, and in recognition of whatever it may do next, Fisher Investments is immediately moving its headquarters from Washington State to Texas. Now, I'm assuming that, at least to start, this is not going to lead to a major shift in jobs. But at some point, that is what will happen. Brian Suits made the point earlier on his show this morning. At some point, when you change headquarters, jobs will follow. Jobs will come. Jobs will move. We've seen that before. He pointed to Elon Musk. He pointed to Tesla, which moved into Texas, brought a lot of people with him. Now, understand that they are a major employer in Clark County. Now, by sheer numbers, if you put that 1,800 in jobs that they're responsible for in King County, or even Snohomish County, probably wouldn't say that that's a big deal. Clark County, that's a huge deal. 1,800 people who potentially will have to move or lose their job, that's a big deal. Now, Ken Fisher, he previously had his headquarters in San Francisco, or really Silicon Valley, and he said, this is crazy. It's way too expensive to do business here. Why would I want to do business in a city and a state that doesn't seem to appreciate me? So he decided to move into Clark County. And now he's basically saying the same exact thing, but for a slightly different reason. This is going to happen again. Probably more so with individuals than businesses, but understand that when you pull something like this, and to the point that he makes in his statement, in recognition of whatever it may do next, when you create that kind of uncertainty and you live in a state where you know Democrats here, lawmakers here, are actively talking about how much more they can tax you. They're talking about a wealth tax. And this decision opens the door to a wealth tax in Washington State. There will be consequences to this. It's celebrated by folks on the left, this decision. They're just rich people. Who cares? But understand that this comes with it significant implications. People will do what's best for themselves, their family, their business. And when you tell them that they're too white and rich, they're going to go somewhere else where they don't have to deal with that nonsense, including folks who are Democrats, including folks who align mostly with the party. But on this, they're going to say, no, it's a little bit too much. I believe it was Satya Nadella who originally was talking about how he would just move his money somewhere else or change residency. People can still live in Washington State, but they may move their residence, their official residence, to Texas or Tennessee or Florida. They might do that to avoid this absurd ruling by the state Supreme Court. And even though we don't normally do the voting this early, it does tie into one of the stories that we have in the third segment of this hour called You Pick the News, where you get to decide via vote which story I talk about. Story number one is Matt Driscoll offers his most offensively bad faith story about capital gains tax. Or how did a Nazi revisionist message make its way into a piece of public art? That one is out of Lakewood. I'm hoping they vote for number one, though, because that's the one I really want to talk about. Not to, you know, not to bias the audience, but send in your text messages at 1-800-465-8770, and I'm going to pray that you vote for story number one, because everyone hates Matt Driscoll, and I like making fun of him. God bless him. Let's find out what else is trending.
What's trending? Dumb Dumb Alert.
Oh, God bless Josh Binda, the Linwood City Council member. I think he's the youngest official in office right now in Washington State, just 23 years old. And boy, does he act like a 13-year-old sometimes. I don't even think he's acting like a 23-year-old. He's acting way younger than that. Linwood Times has been all over this story. And they were covering the Linwood City Council meeting last night and said that some people have been really upset and maybe disgusted even by a poor decision by Joshua Binda in his effort to promote his speaking business, his speaking engagements. Now, this is a guy who first was in trouble because he filmed a video promotion at city chambers, at the council chambers, for this series of speeches that he gets paid for. And you're not supposed to use the city, whether we're talking about property or we're talking about the location, you're not allowed to use it for personal gain. And obviously, this would fall into that. He apologized. He said, I didn't mean it. I didn't know what I was doing. Well, now, he posted on his Instagram feed a promotion for his speaking engagement business in which he is posed in a rather attempt to be sexy way. He's shirtless. You're seeing abs, the lighting. I mean, I think any reasonable person who looks at this would say it is sexualized in nature.
At best, it's an Abercrombie and Fitch ad.
Yeah. It's not pornographic. His shirt is off. But one might say when you're trying to appeal, as he is in this ad or in this post, to minors, probably shouldn't use sexual or sexualized imagery. I think that that is a reasonable position most people would take regardless of their political identity. Maybe not far leftists, but most people, I think, are probably on the same page. So some folks spoke up yesterday, including one resident, Diodato, who actually, I know him. He's been on the show before. He's run for office. He was there at the meeting and said that this is not appropriate.
Now, I asked his counsel if he came undressed exactly as he did in that post to dress middle and high schoolers. Would he even be allowed through the doors? Now, we as residents of a nearly 40,000-strong city in Snohomish County cannot possibly expect powerful multinational for-profit organizations to change the way they market their business. But we expect appropriate behavior from our elected city officials who are members of our community. Is this new conduct to be expected from our elected city officials moving forward? Is this council member using sex marketing for his personal speaking tour, using his title as a city council member, acceptable in this chamber?
Yes. I mean, no. I don't know. Maybe. I mean, I guess we'll find out.
Shouldn't it be no?
Should be no. It's not really their business.
No.
It's not their business, but it is inappropriate.
I mean, so do you think
it's not the business
lose?
Of the council?
Why not, though?
Because he's not doing it as a council member. Now, I mean that in a very direct way. He's not doing that as a council member. But he is doing it as a council member indirectly, because the only reason people even know who he is because he is this young guy who was able to use his activism to get onto the city council. And it's meant as an inspirational story of, hey, even you young kids can get involved, be civic. And I like the message. I probably don't like the politics he would be pushing directly or indirectly. I haven't heard the speech. He has no personality, so I can't imagine it's very good. But
he's the voice of a generation.
I'm a voice. You see, I'm a
transformative
voice
figure
of a generation. I'm a trailblazer for people my age, and I really, due to my passion and my my love of activism. I inspire the whole people. Yeah. Now, give me my check. I just spoke. He has no personality.
It's bad.
But I don't think it's I don't think it's appropriate for the city council to do anything. This seems to me to be a voter issue. If voters don't like him and don't like what he's doing and some of his decisions personally, I think that can be best decided by either supporting his opponent or running yourself to be his opponent. I don't think any of this rises to the level of the council needing to take action. That said, it is appropriate, I think, to call out his lack of, I don't know, common sense in these decisions he is making.
Now, I'm sorry that the council has had to put up with his errant behavior and other behaviors in the past, but we must place all options on the table. It is evident that this and other documented behavior by this council member neither represent the best of this council nor of this city. Henceforth, I call on Councilmember Josh Binda to resign and for this council to take immediate action. And if this council cannot or will not take action, then it is the duty of Linwood residents, both mothers and fathers alike, to recall Linwood City Councilmember Josh Binda from the Linwood City Council. Thank you.
Now, if they want to go forward with a recall, go for it. I don't know what the rules of recall for the Linwood City Council. I don't know what they are. If it's the same as in Seattle, you're not going to go anywhere because you'd have to prove that a law was at least broken, and it wasn't. But look, this is a political issue. This is not an issue about, you know, whether or not the council should get involved. There was a moment of levity, I shall say, because I think he, in his defense, ended up creating a third controversy for the council to thus investigate. And in this case, does seem, in fact, to be related directly to his work as a council member. He was not at the meeting in person. He was online on Zoom or whatever. And he was at some sort of an event. The council president gets involved in questioning of why he's not there. Just listen to how this went down.
I'm currently at the League of Cities for on behalf of the council, and my video service is not working properly. So it only kind of works right now when I have it on, my video not on. So,
all right, Council President Sessions.
Just for the record, Councilmember Binda is not at the League of Cities on behalf of the City Council. Just for the record,
I am on behalf of the council. It's my council member duty, and I am here as a council member.
Okay, so there's some kind of disconnect. The council president, I'm assuming that in order to be considered an official representative of the council has to agree on who that representative will be. It's likely not going to be Josh Binda, the 23-year-old who poses shirtless on his Instagram. Unless he literally means I'm here because I'm a council member and I'm doing this as part of my duty, but that does not mean you represent the council.
You know, that's what he thought was being construed.
So, I don't even know. I can't tell.
I don't think he's smart enough. But did you read what I read into that of him maybe ducking some pushback by not attending? Did you read that?
I don't know if I believe that. I don't think you're saying he expected he was going to get pushback. I don't think anyone signs up to go to the League of Cities or whatever it is to avoid a meeting. You can just call in sick. I got COVID, something like that. So, no, I didn't read that into it. I did start to think, are we paying for this? Like, are taxpayers paying for this? The council says you're not a representative, but you're saying you are representing the city council at this meeting, whatever it is. I know Pete Buttigieg is speaking there, so that means nothing of value can be gained for the city of Linwood by going to this conference. Why don't we reach out to the council and ask if any tax dollars went to sending him as an official representative of the city of Linwood? So weird. I'm almost at the point where I feel bad for him.
I mean, that,
almost.
That council up there is a circus.
They've had so much going on.
Oh,
my God. God bless you all in Linwood. No wonder they couldn't stop the opioid treatment center. Got people like this on the council. Push the button.
What's trending in Trumplandia?
President Trump did an interview last night with Sean Hannity that is getting pretty panned by folks on the right, which is a little bit different than what you normally get, which is criticisms coming from the left, unfair criticisms. In this case, I didn't watch all of the Hannity interview. It's in two parts. I plan to watch it all, but what I watched was not particularly impressive, I don't think. And I say this as someone who, I like Donald Trump. I voted for him. If he's the nominee, I'm going to back him strongly. I love his policies. Didn't always love the tweets and the personality necessarily, but I like the policies and I supported him. But I'm going to call him out when he does things that are inappropriate. And one thing that I think is not only inappropriate, but harmful to his shot and the future potential president of the United States. Because at the end of the day, I do not want Joe Biden in for a second term. I want a Republican. Now, will I accept just any Republican? Not any Republican, but I will take almost any Republican over Joe Biden. Any Republican would be better than Joe Biden. Someone I like is Ron DeSantis. Someone you like is Ron DeSantis. Someone that the Trump supporters like is Ron DeSantis. They might not want him over Donald Trump, but I've seen a whole bunch of people say you should put him on the ticket. It should be Trump DeSantis. 2026 or 2024, whatever. So I don't know if it's wise for Donald Trump to go after Ron DeSantis the way that he has. The whole Ron DeSanctimonious is not a good nickname. Trump
doesn't roll off the tongue.
Trump
very well.
Is really good with nicknames. This one just doesn't make sense. I don't think anyone finds him, certainly not on the right, as sanctimonious. I just don't think that that's how people view him. But he's risking alienating his own supporters, not the hardcore supporters. But I think he's alienating some of his base, but I think he's alienating more so just Republican voters who are open to not just Trump, but maybe another candidate. And so last night, he goes after Ron DeSantis in a bizarre way.
And he was desperate. I said, okay. I gave him a nice endorsement. I said, you write out what you'd like and let me see it. He wrote it out. I thought it was terrible. I changed it, made it great. I gave him a great endorsement. From the moment I pressed that button, he blew the guy away. The race was over. They never even got to spend their money. Then I had him get him. I had to get him against the star of the Democrat Party. It was going to be Stacey Abrams. And now we call him a crackhead because that's what he was, a crackhead.
His name, Gillum.
Gillum. And there was no way Ron was going to beat Gillum. So he got the nomination, but there was no way because this guy was going to be the future of the Democrat Party. And I said, Ron, you can beat this guy. Let's go. I got him the nomination. By the way, couldn't have never gotten the nomination. He would be working in either a pizza parlor place or a law office right now, okay? And he wouldn't be very happy.
Well, that's a huge difference between pizza parlor and a law office. Like, in the cafeteria, in the building in which a law office is housed, maybe? I don't like the attacks. I just don't. I think Ron DeSantis, for the most part, he hasn't even responded. Every once in a while, he'll respond. He'll maybe ding a little bit, but he's never doing it as the person who's aggressive, the offense. He's never on the offense. He's always on the defense when he does, in fact, respond. But usually he just pivots and says, look, I like Donald Trump. I support his policies. I'm focused on Florida, and here's what we're doing. I'm focused on the issues. I'm focused on my record. And that's the smart way. There's nothing to be gained by getting into a insult match with Donald Trump. You're going to lose that 100% of the time, and you're not going to there's nothing to be gained, period, from that. You can only be damaged. But there's a lot to be gained if you don't engage in that kind of stuff. And I think that Donald Trump is taking a huge risk here by going after Ron DeSantis in the way that he is. Yesterday, I was on Kennedy. We spoke about new polling out of New Hampshire and Iowa that, despite the national polling showing that Donald Trump is ahead by like 25 points, it's actually not like that on the local level, statewide level, where Ron DeSantis is ahead. And DeSantis doesn't need to lead in any national poll. I say this during every single election. For those of you who have been with me for a long time, you've heard me say this. National polls mean nothing. They mean absolutely nothing. except when it comes to creating a media narrative. Because obviously, if you're number one in a national poll, the media will say, oh, look at that. So-and-so is in the lead. And then maybe some voters will look at that, and if they're on the fence about who to support, they'll say, well, I don't want to back a loser. I'll go with the winner. So it can have that kind of impact, but it doesn't actually tell you anything. Elections for president, based on what? Is it based on the total vote, the popular vote?
It is not.
No, it's not. It's based on the Electoral College vote. You just have to win enough states. Donald Trump should know that because he won the first time around from an Electoral College standpoint. He didn't win the popular vote. So a national poll, so what? If all of a sudden I'm included in that poll, let's say a pollster called me from Washington State and I said, I am voting for Donald Trump or I am voting for Ron DeSantis. So do you think my vote counts in Washington State? You think that we're going to see a Republican presidential winner come out of blue Washington? No, of course not. So why should you be influenced by my decision in Washington State on a national poll? The only thing that matters is the local poll. I would argue right now it's way too soon. Keep in mind, Ron DeSantis hasn't even announced that he's running. Now, he's positioned, I think, well. I think he's well positioned. And when you are showing on a local level those kinds of numbers and you haven't yet decided to announce, that is a positive. But there's still a lot of time for everyone to screw up, including Ron DeSantis and including and maybe even especially Donald Trump. I just wish he wouldn't go after DeSantis. Focus on your record or focus on Biden's record. 1-800-465-8770 if you want to send me a text. Don't forget, at 4:45, you pick the news. Story number one is Matt Driscoll offers his most offensively bad faith, ignorant column of his career. And that's saying something. This on the capital gains tax. Or how did a Nazi revisionist message make its way into a piece of public art in Lakewood? Which story do you want me to cover? Text 1-800-465-8770. You're listening to The Jason Rant Show.
TH Mobile App.
Olympia, Sammamish, Lakewood, Bellevue.
This is the Big Local on The Jason Rant Show.
Bellingham, Kirkland, Z-Town.
Stories about you, not about Seattle.
Hey, look at that, 4:30 on a weekday afternoon. That means it's time for The Big Local. Brought to you by Alpine Specialty Services, online at alpineclean.com. It's a part of the show where we completely ignore stories coming out of Seattle, and instead, we focus all of our attention on the communities you live in and care about most. We start on Bainbridge Island, where the school district there just hired an independent investigator to review the conduct of staff after an incident last month involving a 9-year-old. It all happened at Ordway Elementary School. This 9-year-old was suffering from some kind of anxiety attack, and it caused a little bit of a disturbance, one that landed him in the back of a police car. Now, some of you will say just off the bat, a 9-year-old in a police car, that's not appropriate. Normally, I would probably agree with you, but let's go through some of the details first. Let us not cast judgment on a cover of a book with a stone or something like that.
You had all the words there, yeah.
Yeah. Glass houses or something. Because the kid actually ended up running away from the campus, and that's not safe. Dr. Peter Bang Knudsen is the superintendent of the school district, and he spoke with King 5 and said, look, our staff members did what we could to de-escalate the situation, but it wasn't working.
Safety concern was the student was off the campus and near the road and in a parking lot. And I think our staff were doing the best they could in the situation, but it is one of the reasons why we're asking an investigator to look into all the different components, both before the filming happened as well as during the incident as well.
This seems like a responsible thing to do, to react to some of the concerns that I'm assuming were expressed by more than just one parent, the one who's involved. So they're trying to deal with this kid who apparently has ADHD, dyslexia, and anxiety. The way the kid was acting, I'm suspicious that there might be something else going on, but I don't know. They tried to help. They couldn't. They end up calling the cops to help because, look, the kid is running off campus. They're not trained to go out hunting for a child that's missing. They got the cops involved. Now, the cops arrive, and to be very clear, they were incredibly patient with this kid. It was caught on body cam. We got a little snippet of it. But they aren't just patient. They're showing compassion. They're trying to help this kid go through this anxiety attack.
Deep breaths.
So calm. I'm going to put my body down for myself. Make good choices.
So they're trying, but at some point, they end up having to put him in the back of the car just to chill out a bit because he was acting out. He was kicking and screaming. And so they finally get him in the back of this patrol car, and then he starts pounding on the window. Then his mother shows up and understandably breaks down. Now, part of what she said is, I did not approve of calling 911. I did not approve of that. Her name is Lindsay. And she also spoke with King 5.
I remember finally the door opening and saying to Eli, you are safe with me. You are safe now. I had to get him out of there. I had to get him out of there.
Now, I imagine a parent who cares deeply about their kid will react in a similar way. No one wants to see their kid in the back of a patrol vehicle. No one wants to see their kid treated that way. And she's showing up without any context as to what happened. But it sounds like, even learning about what had happened, she said what the district did is just, you can't defend it.
No child should be locked in a police car. There's no other way around that.
Except there is. There are circumstances in which a child should be in the back of a police car. I think it should likely be the last resort if you can't get a kid under control. But if they're a danger to themselves or others, then it is 100% appropriate. Now, King 5 wants you to side with this mother. They're desperate for you to do that. The whole framing of this story, to me, reads like this is, you better get in line with the parent. The title is, Bainbridge Island Boy Experiencing Anxiety Episode at School Was Locked in the Back of a Police Car. Now, that's technically true. It's what happened. But it does send a slightly different message about the context leading up to it. Not an out-of-control person. It makes it sound like the cop showed up, roughed this kid up a little bit, and threw him in the back of the cruiser. Popo's here, putting him in handcuffs. That's what it made it sound like to me. That's why I clicked on it. And I've certainly seen, not necessarily police overreact, although that sometimes happens, but it's usually a school that's overreacted. You will almost never get me siding with the school district. They are 100% correct here. They are 100% without a shadow of a doubt correct here based on the video that we have access to. Now, is it possible that before the body cam footage was rolling that the teachers were making the situation worse? Maybe. I'll concede that. But number one, I get vibes from this mother who, again, I concede that the way she reacted is probably the way most parents would react. But there's just some vibe about her that says she overreacts on everything. Maybe not fair of me to judge because of a book and a cover and a stone and a glass house or something. And I concede that. But what exactly was the school supposed to do? Just allow this kid to just roam free? Are the teachers and the staff and the principal, they're supposed to go chasing after this kid all afternoon? Are we supposed to allow the kid to just have this episode in school, in class? What are they supposed to do? They tried their best. I'm going to assume that they tried their best and they acted in good faith. And the only reason they asked police to arrive was just for some supplemental assistance. The kid wasn't handcuffed. The kid wasn't, quote unquote, locked in the back of a... Like, they were there. They were just trying to calm him down a little bit. I honestly don't know what they're supposed to do. And Bainbridge Island, by the way, very far to the left, the school district. So I don't think they ever rushed to call the cops. What were they supposed to do?
Yeah, no, I completely agree with you. And who tipped off King 5 on this?
The mother is my assumption. No. Look, I get why the mom is upset. I totally understand it. And I understand why she told the King 5. Had she told me, I would have done a story, different perspective. But I do think that there's value in this story. She would not like my position, but I would cover it. So I don't begrudge her for any of that. She's a mom who's doing what she thinks is in the best interest of her kid. But the fact of the matter is, I think the school and the cops did exactly the same thing. They did what they thought was in the best interest of this kid. And unless you're going to tell me some dramatic information or something that just changes everything completely, I can't see myself siding against the school. We'll wait for the investigation. We'll see what ends up happening. And then we'll cheer it on. And if we find that the teachers acted inappropriate in some way, okay, I'll call them out. I obviously have no problem calling out teachers who are bad at what they do. But my God, what's going on here? I've yet to hear an alternative plan that isn't based in, let's be honest, just total selfishness. I haven't heard that. Because it sounds like they were doing what they were taught to do, and the kid didn't react. At some point, you also have to understand, as a parent, you're not sending kids to a school that's specializing in whatever special need a particular student has. You might have a teacher who knows what they're doing and is trained, but there are limits to what they're able to do. It drives me nuts that we're just automatically assuming that, well, the cops were involved, and so that means it's bad because he's 9 years old. Okay, you give me an alternative and we'll talk about it. 1-800-465-8770, you pick the news. Coming up next, story number one, Matt Driscoll offers an offensively bad take on the capital gains tax ruling, or how did a Nazi revisionist message make its way into a piece of public art in Lakewood? Pick the story, 1-800-465-8770. Send me your text. It's the Jason Rancho.
You pick the topic on the Jason Rancho.
Oh, indeed, you do get to pick the topic, and I'm so grateful that you decided to go with the Matt Driscoll column today in the News Tribune and technically was put up last night at 7 o'clock, and it came across my feed as I do my show prep the night before, and it is offensively bad faith. Like, it's argued, it's so bad faith that it's offensive. It's titled, "It Just Got a Little More Expensive to Be Filthy Rich in Washington." Boo-hoo! Now, there are a lot of people who have been taking that position, and they're almost all on the left. I don't know of anyone on the right who's taken that position as it relates to the capital gains tax. These are people who loathe the rich, who don't care that the rich have to pay a little bit more. And oftentimes, it's a position taken by people who will never be rich themselves. They have given up on themselves. They have given up on the fact that they will ever be true financial. Take a pay cut so someone else who makes less than you can make a little bit more. They won't do that, of course, but they know that they're never going to be uber wealthy. I think that there is a motivating factor in earning more money. I wish that I was a billionaire and I'm going to work hard until I get there. Will I ever get there? Probably not. Likely not. But I'm going to work my tail off because maybe I'll get to the point where I'm a multimillionaire. That's just what in part drives me. Now, of course, none of this is all about money. It's about the job that you do and what you're doing and how you're doing it. But people like Matt Driscoll don't consider that. They look at someone who's wealthy and they think they didn't earn the money on their own. That's a common left-wing belief. You didn't earn that. You didn't build that. Obama said you didn't build that. Talking about small businesses. And the dismissive nature of this article tells you how little he understands about the Constitution, but really how little he cares about the standard that has just been set by the Supreme Court here in Washington State that decided a capital gains tax is an income tax, is not an income tax, is an excise tax. 49 states and the IRS say a capital gains tax is an income tax. But because the left-wing Supreme Court, and they wrote this in their piece, in their decision, because they see too many wealthy white people and too few wealthy black people, that the tax system here disproportionately impacts blacks, black Washingtonians. And so they're just going to redefine the term. He writes, "Break out the tissues and tiny violins, or if it's more your style, pour one out for your wealthy friend's summer home." On Friday, in an objectively stunning decision, the Washington State Supreme Court upheld the constitutionality of the state's controversial capital gains tax. Given Washington's long, stubborn history of regressive taxation, proponents of the tax, and by that I mean almost exclusively Democrats, described the court's decision as a dawning of a new day. More importantly, it marked a major step towards writing, quote, an upside-down tax structure. And of course, he's referring to a comment that was made by Jay Inslee. Now, he goes on to say, there's just one catch. A lot of people are in no mood to celebrate, as it turns out. Above and beyond the roughly 8,000 well-to-do Washington residents who will actually have to pay a capital gains tax. I don't even understand what that means. Whether they're partisan warriors hopped up on right-wing talking points or Reagan-era dreamers still keen on trickle-down economics, a tax expected to bring in $500 million a year for criminally underfunded things like education and childcare that would impact far less than 1% of state residents has attracted predictable opposition from many who would never pay a cent. So you will never own a gun, and yet you strive really hard to stop gun ownership. You will never marry a man, but you work really, really hard for gay rights. Do you only have to pay a tax in order to understand why it might not be a good idea to tax? Do people who oppose hardcore taxes against businesses who don't own businesses, are they allowed to talk about it? Or is their anger and concern misplaced? I love this because it's basically a lazier argument than when some folks used to say, well, men should have no say in abortion rights, in abortion access, because men can't get pregnant. This is the one time that they say men can't get pregnant. But it's absurd. It impacts all of us. And I imagine that Matt Driscoll would say the same thing for the issues I mentioned for him. Gay marriage, gun rights, it affects all of us. I agree, which is why I think you should have an opinion. I might not like your opinion. I'll probably disagree with your opinion on some things. Maybe others will find some common ground. But the idea that you can't be outraged or annoyed because you don't pay, you will never pay that tax, just shows you how little he understands about this issue. This isn't just about the income tax that we're pretending is an excise tax. This is about the lengths that the Supreme Court will go in order to justify something that they absolutely 100% know to be unconstitutional merely because politically they agree with the goal. That's what this is about. This is about abuse of power. It is, of course, directly about a tax that will impact about 1% of Washingtonians. Although, as we told you in the last hour, Fisher Investments, they're done. They're moving their headquarters. They may not move all the jobs immediately, but eventually that will happen. They're moving over this. That impacts a bunch of people in Clark County. And it signals to some other people who might be impacted, yeah, maybe you should move too. Pushes them out the door. And no longer will you get the funding for all those criminally underfunded projects that you want funded. That's the direct story. The indirect story is the abuse. When the Supreme Court of the United States decides in favor of gun rights, which is objectively what the Constitution allows for. But let's ignore that for a moment. Let's just take the perspective of the left. Look at those justices deciding to reinterpret the Constitution because they have a love affair with gun culture. That's what they say. That's what they say. And yet, in this case, they seem okay with it. Now, people arguing in bad faith might say, well, Jason, you're doing the same thing that we do towards gun laws. You're just doing it towards the liberal Supreme Court here as it relates to the income tax. And of course, my response to that would be, even you, dude, Matt Driscoll, even in your story, you call it objectively. What was the word that you used? What was the phrasing that you used? Objectively stunning. Why was it objectively stunning? Because there is an understanding, even of people who agree with this capital gains tax, that the Supreme Court reinvented what an income tax is and really what an excise tax is. There is a basic understanding from folks on the right and the left that what the Supreme Court did here with their decision makes no sense whatsoever from a legal perspective. And the only reason that it's being celebrated is simply you like it. You like it. Now, you read through this ridiculous argument that Driscoll tries to provide. And he says legal arguments are fun and all, but if you're clinging to dusty precedents and semantics in defense of a system that benefits the wealthy at the clear expense of everyone else, that's not constitutional righteousness. It's just deluded indifference or maybe something worse. Again, he depends on a – and it's funny that he doesn't understand this. He clings to dusty precedents and semantics in defense of the First Amendment, in defense of a free press. He clings to that. So do I. We're supposed to cling to things that guarantee us rights. Just because you don't like a particular law or a precedent or semantics, however you want to describe it to justify this nonsense, doesn't mean that you're on the side of righteousness. You're not. You just don't care about the rule of law. He basically argues what the Supreme Court did, which is it doesn't matter what the law says. I just don't like our current tax system, and that's enough for us to toss our Constitution, completely ignore precedent, and just move forward as if there's nothing to see here. That's how abuse works. That's exactly how abuse works. But please let me know the next time he writes some column about what's going on in Florida that he pretends is an abuse of the system when it's passed by the law, by the legislature. Let me know when that one comes out. 1-800-465-877. Don't forget, I'm on Tucker Carlson tonight. You can watch it. I'll post the video up online at facebook.com/JasonRantsShow.